No, I don't actually have anything planned.
That's okay. That's okay. We're wrecked. That's fine. We just go with the bloody flow. It's happening.
You've lost weight.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, well, I've been walking and I'm watching my calories.
Am I going to be the fat friend on the stage?
No, I'm still the fat friend. I'm still the fat friend.
I had a friend that took a photograph of me, a candid snap of me in the pub, and he put it into the group chat as like, look who I'm out with. I'm out with Kevin. And I had an existential breakdown for the rest of the night where I just thought, oh my God, I've turned into my 70-year-old dad. It was really shocking. And that's a nice segue for de-aging.
Oh, honestly.
I'll use small words that you'll be sure to understand, you warthog-faced buffoon.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it.
What did you say?
You are a sad, strange little man.
Don't call me stupid.
Hello, and welcome to The Best Bits, a movie podcast where we pick our favorite scenes from randomly selected, weirdly specific themes. This is your co-host, a writer of how many films have I done?
One in a bit.
And three in a bit episodes of TV. And I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, a writer of three films plus a Christmas special. You will. Will Collins.
How are you getting on, Kevin Lehane? What's the crack? Good to be here.
I'm fucking exhausted.
I'm tired too. I wish I could de-age right now.
Just put on that beauty filter. That's all you need.
I have all the beauty filters switched on. I have them all on right now. My computer is chugging. The RAM has been sucked up trying to take the wrinkles and harsh life off of my face.
I don't think that light is your friend, so we should turn down the light in the... That's a Simpsons reference. I'm not calling Will old.
It's awfully dark in here.
Light is not your friend. All right, let's do this thing.
Oh, God.
Oh, my God. De-aging.
Yeah, were you thrilled?
I'll tell you what I can tell you.
Go on.
I remember when de-aging was first spoken about, and it was like, oh, it's going to be this cool new thing. Right. And it was for X-Men The Last Stand.
And I would expect you of all people would understand my feelings about the misuse of power.
Ah, power corrupts and all that. Yes, I know, Charles. When are you going to stop lecturing me?
When you start listening.
And I remember seeing that film and seeing the de-aging effect in that film. And
I remember thinking, oh, that doesn't look very convincing.
Mm-hmm. It was like the skin looks like it wants to slip off their face and their teeth are moving around. It's weird.
Why did they look like a Kardashian? But that only came about in 2006.
Wow.
So in 16 years, there haven't been that many de-aging films. A lot of Marvel.
They're Marvel. That's what primarily I'm thinking Marvel.
Star Wars. Disney have a fierce hard-on for it.
There's a few outside of that.
Yeah.
Definitely. Oh, hang on a second. Oh, Disney used it for Tron as well.
Dad. I'm not your father, Sam. But I'm very, very happy to see you.
That was an early one.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
You look at you, the enthusiasm. I think they've gotten better in recent years. I think the Marvel movies, like, you know, the Samuel Jackson one was pretty decent.
Yeah, but Black don't crack. I mean, they didn't have to do much there. Just take his eye patch off and suddenly he's like, my God, it's a young Nick Fury.
They've de-aged him amazingly. But yeah, the early ones, the Michael Douglas one. I didn't like.
Nah.
It looks so weird still.
I'll tell you what my favorite de-aging scene was to get the ball rolling.
Wow, you're starting at with your favorite. Wow. I've got one I could share.
I'm Benjamin Buttoning this. Oh, I'm shit, going okay. Right back.
Right, okay.
And my pick is not Benjamin Button.
Oh, okay.
Do you know what it is?
Well, okay. Do you want me to try and guess? Right.
All the clues I've given you.
Is this
actually, you tell me what your pick is and then I'll tell you what mine is.
Okay, my pick.
Drag it out because we've got another 50 minutes to film.
Okay, my pick predates X-Men The Last Stand and I don't know, is this a cheat? Because as I looked at all of the kind of releases with all these de-aging ones and I basically, there isn't even the Irishman, you know, it just, it's the Uncanny Valley effect.
It's what it is.
Do you remember when Robert De Niro was beating up the guy and he was curb stomping him?
Yeah.
And he had this rubber face on and he still had the body of like a 75-year-old.
Yeah. It was one of those moments, one of those shots where editing could have been your friend. Or could have been a friend to Robert De Niro in that moment.
Like that Liam Neeson cut.
Oh, yeah. Jumping over the
goes
fence.
Goes over a fence in 60 cuts.
Yeah. I think we needed 60 cuts of Robert De Niro pushing the guy out through those the shop doors and not seeing the walk. Because he has this really frail walk up to the man on the street. But I went for a cheat answer, right? And my cheat answer comes from 2002. And it is from The Lord of the Rings, Two Towers, and it's the de-aging of King Theoden.
Mm-hmm.
When we meet him, he is old and decrepit and almost like, you can see the cobwebs in his hair.
Which one was he again?
He's the king of the Rohan riders. And he's the, you know.
Rohan.
So he was.
Were they like the goodies?
They're on the horses. The ones on horses.
The horses. The horse people. Okay.
The horse people. Actually, I think the colloquial name was.
Were they fighting?
They were the horses.
Were they fighting with the Frodos?
They were the horses. Yeah. The horses were fighting the Frodos. And then there was the pointy-eared lads. And they were just fighting with anyone.
They were just collecting all the rings. So it was like Sonic.
That was. Oh God, there's going to be so many frustrated Lord of the Rings fans out there right now.
Madness.
But my favourite age of scene comes for the moment where Gandalf sees that he's under the influence of Wormtongue, who's under the influence of Saruman.
I release you from the spell. I will draw you, Saruman, as poison is drawn from a wound.
And we see him de-aging from his old decrepit self to his natural self. And the special effect is him actually becoming younger. And so in actual fact, it's a cheat because his younger self is how he looks. Bernard Hill looks in real life. So that was my preferred de-aging scene. Yeah, it's a cheat.
And mine is actually from The Last Crusade. If you rewind the ending, when Donovan drinks the wrong cup, if you rewind it,
right,
you get to see him de-age.
It goes from a skeleton, a pile of dust.
He turns from John Carpenter into James Cameron. It's incredible. No, genuinely. I think that's a fair pick, to be honest.
Thank Christ.
I don't particularly think any of the de-aging scenes are that interesting.
Yeah.
It is Uncanny Valley, so I went for a cheat as well. And I went for Death Becomes Her.
Brilliant.
The Robert Zemeckis film.
Yeah.
And it's the scene when Meryl Streep drinks the potion.
Great.
And she says, now a warning. And as she's leaving the mansion, she looks at herself in the mirror and she starts to visibly de-age. Her boobs lift, her bum tightens, her wrinkles on her neck disappear, and Meryl Streep goes from a woman in her late 40s into a woman in her early 30s. And it is very convincing.
I'm a girl.
And it's also a very good film. So that was my pick.
Great film. I haven't seen it since when it came out, mid-90s.
David Kep.
Since the mid-90s, wasn't it?
I think it's a great satire, and
yeah,
it's so funny.
And I love the scene at Bruce Willis's funeral, and they're just these decrepit creatures hidden under shrouds at the back of the church. And it's a really, they've turned into witches. Yeah. So that's your favourite pick for the de-aging scene.
So
are you going to go backwards and do the history of de-aging or discuss de-aging?
Yeah, X-Men.
Right.
And
they've done it.
Yeah.
What else can we tell them?
You know, sometimes the wheel, it doesn't go your way.
It's a bit cruel sometimes, yeah.
It doesn't go your way. Yeah. It's a bit cruel sometimes.
Yeah. But listen, Marvel have used de-aging quite a lot.
Yeah.
Michelle Pfeiffer, Ant-Man sequel. Michelle Pfeiffer. Am I right in saying that? She was in that.
I don't know.
the research here.
What you have for your tea?
Have the wheels come off this topic, Kevin?
I might call someone.
Do that.
A specialist.
Podbot, hand me my Motorola. See if anyone can come in and help us out.
Right. Oh, jeez, he actually does have a Motorola. Would you look at the state of it? You can get disinfectant wipes now, you know.
Just assume we can call. I'm at the dial in the... Hi! Yeah, are you free?
Oh, shit.
He's at the door.
I'll get this.
You actually do have someone coming.
We really need to take some of those chains off the door. Like, we don't need to be that reinforced.
Oh, Jesus. Yes, Pierce.
Hello, Pierce.
Pierce, take a seat.
Who's on this
Pierce.
Headset?
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. Pierce.
Hello.
Were you just standing right outside the pub for the last, like, 20 minutes?
Always. I'm always there, Kevin. I run a little coffee stand outside just in case. You're putting my fictitious kids through college.
I was wondering what the wailing was. But, my God. Welcome back, Pierce.
What's the crack?
Hello, hey. Pierce Ryan.
Hello.
Listeners might remember Pierce from season 2, episode something or other.
Don't even try and attempt it.
Where are we?
It was one of the episodes. Best unscripted cameo and Jump the Shark, and then the Rocky IV commentary, and then Stone Cold on Patreon.
Yeah. This is really. I should have shares in the Best Bits podcast at this point. I think
you really should. Yeah.
Do we have any NFTs or some kind of cryptocurrency that you're going to be hawking around?
I'm drawing a monkey as we speak, Pierce, and it's yours.
Is that what you're doing? Okay.
What did you call me?
Aren't all the celebrities buying NFT monkeys at the moment? Isn't
apes
that the thing
will,
they're doing? Mm-hmm. This particular NFT.
If they have a tail, they're a monkey. If they don't have a tail,
I can't see. It's just their head. I can't tell. All I'm seeing is the head. I can't tell if there's a tail or if there's not a tail.
All I can see are arses. So, you know.
That's going to be the title of your autobiography, isn't it, Kevin? I remember you told me.
It is. Everywhere I go, all I see are arses. Pierce, we had a topic, mm-hmm. Best De-Aged Scene. We thoroughly explored it and we got into the nitty gritty.
Oh, God. You started slating Lord of the Rings.
Who's de-aged in the Lord of the Rings? Is Gandalf, I suppose, in The Hobbit?
King Theoden, the king, or the steward, or whatever he is, of Rohan.
The horses.
Okay. In the second one.
The horses.
The horses are de-aged.
Well, that's what Gollum as well, right? Gollum looks a bit younger in the first film when we see a glimpse of him, don't we?
Oh, I suppose, yeah.
There we go. And basically, John Travolta is getting younger in every film, right? No. Ultimately, he's just going to end up playing like the bubble child at the end of 2001. That's going to be his final role, I think, John Travolta.
Well, it'll have to be a remake because he was in a film called The Boy in the Plastic Bubble, where he was actually in a plastic bubble. So he's been there, man. He's been there.
And he was also in a film called Pulp Fiction, which is what I think when I look at some of the DH faces on screen.
But Kevin, what are we going to do? What are we going to do if we're dropping de-aging and you have to bring in Pierce? Why are you bringing Pierce
so,
in?
So, listen, you were going to take over and host this episode because we're both absolutely shattered. It's over to you.
No pressure,
and
Pierce.
And here we go. Let's roll the Pierce theme for the podcast.
Fisty, 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 fisty. Ooh, fisty, fisty, fisty.
Ah. This is really handy because I've just got my scene wheel back from the repair shop. I don't know if you know Mick's scene wheel repair shop and tattoo parlor.
Yes.
It's in Coolockland.
I know it.
And tattoo parlor as well.
They're robbing bastards.
And they only do tattoos of Irish directors.
Wow.
Oh, Christ.
You got one.
It's kind of amazing. And also, here's the other condition. They must be doing an action that rhymes with their name. So I have three so far. I have Jim at the gym. I have Neil having a meal. And I have Lenny and Penny's. Just doing a shop. There we go. And they're all on my left knee.
That's a bit of a stretch there.
And it was all done today, in fact. So, okay, let's spin our... let's spin the scene wheel that's just been recently repaired by Mick and see what happens.
It looks more like an octagon. Are we expected to fight each other over this? And do you want to do the honours, Pierce?
Best DVD or Blu-ray extras or 4K or whatever the hell you're having yourself. So the best kind of extras that I've ever been on physical media. I guess that incorporates kind of making of documentaries, commentaries.
I've got one.
Go on.
Yeah, it's the behind-the-scenes footage with David O. Russell and Lily Tomlin on I Heart Huckabees.
I haven't seen this. Why is it so good?
Well, you get to see them negotiate how to block out a scene, and it's really, you know, it gives you great insight into Hollywood and how it works. And I watched that. I think it was 2006.
Are you taking a piss?
No, I'm deadly serious.
Is it real? Okay.
It's real. I watched that, and it made me want to be a screenwriter. I just...
Yeah. Thought it was like, it was so moving.
No, you taking the piss.
Pierce knows what I'm talking about.
We know that. Yeah.
Was it a big bust up?
I played a clip there.
Okay.
Fuck you. I'm just trying to fucking help you. Do you understand me?
No,
I'm being a fucking collaborator. Do I not fucking yell at you before right now? I never fucking yelled at you. You fucking stand.
That would be one of mine.
Okay. I honestly don't know what that clip is because I'm not hearing the clip, and I think it might that might be a joke clip. I think it is a joke clip.
My God, you don't trust me at all. After 17 years, you don't trust me at all.
You know what mine is, right? Because I've had literally seconds to research this topic. So my mind has gone to, when anyone asks me what's my favorite DVD extra DVD special features, I always think they're only one film.
Is that how you used to buy them in HMV? Do you have any DVDs?
The only films I could think of were Lord of the Rings, Kevin. Lord of the Rings.
Oh,
No.
Was there a special de-aging extra that you were particularly drawn to?
Well, I've got two, right? And right. I'm actually...
I particularly like the four-hour audio commentary on the extended editions. I thought it was really in-depth.
Four-hour commentaries on each film. Oh, there's four-hour commentaries on each film. No, I wasn't going to pick this. This isn't my pick, but I have to actually say it. The bloody well extra features in the Lord of the Rings extended editions are amazing. But it's not my pick. My pick is the Alien Quadrilogy.
Ooh, genuinely great pick. I've watched those behind the scenes stuff almost as much as the films themselves.
Yes. Honestly, listeners, if you haven't picked up a copy of the Alien Quadrilogy, with each film, you basically get a feature film length documentary for the making of each film.
Yes. The Alien one is called The Beast Within.
And they don't pull any punches on those.
That's what's amazing.
Certainly to be scared has been part of the human nature since its very beginnings.
What Alien says about us now are those fears that we have, which may be those fears that show up when we're dreaming, the nightmares.
I think he took a lot of techniques from Alfred Hitchcock in the sense that you don't really see everything. The imagination is used, and I think that's what made it so terrifying.
I think once you're making a movie, you better keep that pressure on all the way through. On anything, actually. But God knows on a thriller, or God knows it's a marathon of tension.
Yes, we hear the struggles, the pain,
the bullshit. Yeah. Some of the shitty things that the executives were doing.
Yes.
Especially to David Fincher on Alien 3.
Even if you hate Alien 3, the feature-length documentary for Alien 3 is riveting. Oftentimes, when you have a documentary about a film that goes wrong, it's worth the making of a bad film because you get an interesting documentary because it's full of drama and juiciness. And these extra features are packed, even for Alien Resurrection.
That's interesting because lots of Ridley Scott movies have amazing kind of documentaries. About like Blade Runner, obviously, has got he's got one as well, which is Dangerous Days, I think is the name of it. It's about 3.5 hours long.
Yes. Is that the one? That's not the one that Mark Kermode made. It's not.
No, it's not. No.
What was the Exorcist one? The Fear of God.
The Fear of God is so good.
That was great.
Yeah.
That wasn't the full title of it. The Fear of God is so good. That's what it sounded like.
This is cinema as magical incantation. And as any Sorcerer's Apprentice knows, even good magic can be dangerous.
But that's right. I remember like those documentaries on BBC when they were first shown, and then of course they're ported over onto DVD. But they were amazing. That's when you first saw the spider walk, wasn't it? Remember they had unearthed the footage, and it was the first time you had seen any of that. He also did a brilliant one on the French Connection, I think, as well, which is also on the DVD.
But what was really important about The Fear of God is that that led to a tidal wave of support for unbanning that film. So, you know, the power of that documentary, you know, it can't be understated, really.
That's right. And there was like a freaking cut then that came out afterwards with the like the spider walk and everything reinstated into it, wasn't it? Or was the cut that you've never seen?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Maybe, I think it was called, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, no, all those I mentioned this to somebody there before, but if you go on the Magnolia DVD, and by the way, a lot of these documentaries you can find on YouTube now, obviously, you know, people have just ripped them and put them up.
That's also one of the things I like about this new age is, although I think there's a big difference between documentaries of films before they're coming out, where it's almost like it's marketing.
EPK stuff. I hate it.
Yeah. But there are a lot of really interesting but like the David O. Russell one.
The David O. Russell one. Yeah, which shows you, the only way to direct is to shout at people.
Ah, you see, I knew you were taking a piss. I knew it.
That's clearly the way to direct and get. That's clearly the way to get the best out of people is just to shout at them.
Oh.
But the Making of Magnolia documentary, you can find it on YouTube. It's called That Moment, and it's about 70-something minutes long. And it's brilliant because it literally goes from him writing the script all the way to the premiere.
It was weird because I found that I couldn't write in the chaos of Boogie Nights coming out. I mean, I just couldn't. I think I just wanted to make another movie right away because I was scared about expectations. And I thought I could cut them off at the pass if I just went right away and made another one. And as it started to die out, I started to write. So anyway, I wrote for 8 months. And the reality is that the majority of the writing really happened in the last 2 weeks. I went to Bill Macy's cabin in Vermont for a week, which is the middle of fucking nowhere. And that was really fantastic. And there was a snake outside the cabin. So, and this is true, I was really scared to leave. So it really kept me in the cabin for 1 week. And I wrote, And I mean, it was really like ironing. Richard LeGravenaise has always described sort of writing as like, if you're ironing a shirt, you go a little bit and then you go a little bit more, you know, over the same section again, but down a little bit more and then down a little bit more. And that's kind of what it was like. And in those 2 weeks, it was just like,
you see a lot of stuff that you wouldn't normally see in a documentary. For example, there's a bit, and they're in the middle of shooting, and he finds out that basically some of the budget has been taken away, or there's some kind of stuff going on that he wasn't aware, and literally it's just come to light. And all of this has been filmed, and normally you would imagine that would be edited out of a documentary, but they kept it in. It's really, really interesting. What's also interesting is seeing him, he's continuing to write while he's filming, which you're just kind of going, where are you finding the time? For God's sake, do you ever sleep to do that? I mean, he's literally coming in with new scenes that he's written that night, you know, after a full day's shooting. It's quite incredible.
I watched, I didn't know what Magnolia was. And
it's paint.
I rented it, the DVD. So it was just in the dawn of DVDs. So I'd actually rented a DVD from Extravision. And there was this really surly guy working behind the counter. And, oh, God, he just almost turned me off films. That's what I'm insinuating, Kevin. but I went home, watched the movie. I loved the film. I went to the extra features, watched that documentary. I loved the film even more. Then I went back and rewatched the film. It was so raw and honest. And as you said, candid.
Yeah.
There were moments there even where it almost feels like it's like drunk footage of them.
Them it's like their own personal like home movie kind of footage.
Exactly.
Like there's bits when he's on set with Philip Seymour Hoffman and they're just having a laugh. Basically, and he's kind of he's showing the camera, this is how Phil is going to do the next scene. And Phil just has to go over to the mantelpiece and open up a cigar box. But like the way that Phil, he imagines is going to do it, basically he finds obstacles everywhere on his way to the cigar box and is rattling around everything. So he's turning what should be just, you know, a 5 second scene into like 2 minutes long, basically, you know, a big character kind of moment. It's just fabulous.
It's in the era just before everyone got publicity managed, before social media basically took over, where people's guards were down a little bit more. And so an extra camera on the set was just like, oh, look, no one will ever see this.
Do you know what? What you're talking about there, Will, you can actually even see it with the DVD releases of Paul Thomas Anderson's movies, because Hard Eight, or Sydney, I think he calls it, that has fabulous, two brilliant commentaries on it. Again, you can find these commentaries on YouTube, where he's really, really candid about the filming of this and basically the trouble that he had with the production company. And he had to basically steal his own movie in order to bring it to Cannes.
Oh, I remember this now.
Yeah, and he goes into a load of detail about it. It's really well put together. You've got Philip Baker Hall as well, kind of chips in. There's lots of the cast kind of talking. And they're talking very freely.
It's my first movie, and it means a lot to me. It kind of became a bastard child for a little while. But it's mine now, and I love it, and there's a lot to say. So I'll start saying it. The reason why the titles are at the beginning is because of a guy named Robert Jones, who's one of the producers of this movie. I had the four presentation cards at the beginning, and then the movie started. In other words, Reicher Entertainment presents Green Pear Productions associated with Trinity, PT Artist Picture, boom, and we start. Because I like to do it that way. That's how Boogie Nights is. And what happened was I got, you know, through a sort of everyone's contract, a sort of standard movie contract is that your title goes before the picture. You know, your sort of main title credit goes before the picture. Now, considering that I'm friends with everyone who's on this movie, with the exception of Robert Jones, everyone agreed to waive that right. Except Robert Jones, who had been essentially kicked off the movie by Reicher Entertainment. So before that came to light, I had to get his permission, and he said point blank to me, I will not waive my right to have the main title at the beginning, so therefore I am essentially forcing you to put the main titles at the beginning.
So it's the same with like Boogie Nights.
Yeah.
Boogie Nights got two brilliant commentary tracks, him just on his own.
You're listening to a guy who learned a lot about ripping off movies from watching Laserdiscs with director commentary. Some of this movie comes from me, sure. I don't know what the fuck I was thinking. When I sat down with Mike DeLuca, I had just come from a situation where I'd gotten so royally fucked over. You know, I just came at him and he was like, calm down. What the fuck is your problem? Maybe someone else would want to meet Robert De Niro or Tom Hanks or something. I wanted to meet John C. fucking Reilly. Every single thing he does makes me laugh. What the fuck does that have to do with anything? I'm pretty egotistical and proud of this movie.
This is a giant cock.
Macy gets the gun, and this crowd of college kids cheers. Now then he shoots them, and they cheer even louder. And I thought, well, I have fucked up. Well, then Macy walks out, and he shot himself in the face, and they shut the fuck up real quick.
We like it. I wrote and directed this movie, by the way. You don't think I can do it again? Well, watch what I have up my sleeve.
But also there's one where he basically goes and visits lots of the cast in their own homes, and they're just having the chat. And probably the most memorable bit of it is Mark Wahlberg, who who basically tells a story about how in his real life he broke his penis.
Well, I've had my penis broken, if you can believe that or not, while having sex.
How?
Just snapped the other way.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
How? When?
Ugh. Not good.
Like what? Like what happened?
I thought I was dying, bro.
When did this happen?
I went to the bathroom. I laid there for about 5 minutes. I went into the bathroom. I turned the light on. And it, like, I don't know. You see, like, the Little Rascals or, like, the Three Stooges. When they're, like, making a pie or something.
Uh-huh.
Or it's like blown up, or an inner tube is about to explode, like an old car tire is about to explode. I had that a big black bubble around my prick, and I went into shock. And I laid down. I thought it was fucking a bad dream. I woke up the next morning, and the swelling was gone, and my whole entire penis was blacker than Andy's dick. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
How long was it like that?
About 2 weeks.
Really?
Didn't move, didn't get hard, nothing.
How did it get better? It just went away?
Yeah, it just like turned, you know, went from black to blue to purple.
Jesus Christ.
Red.
And then back to
pink.
Back to pink.
Thank God.
Back to normal.
Yeah.
So there we go. Podbox, if you want to cue that one up.
Done.
Oh my God.
You're welcome.
You can. But literally, so you have that, then Magnolia has that brilliant documentary, but then after that, he didn't do any more commentaries or anything like that for his movies, and the extras kind of just dwindled away, to be honest with you.
I've always wondered why Spielberg never did any commentaries for his films. That would be fascinating. Did any of you guys see the From Dusk Till Dawn documentary, Full Tilt Boogie?
No.
Where Tarantino basically gave his friend carte blanche to shoot a documentary on the making of From Dusk Till Dawn, but the documentary was focused more on the day-to-day sort of production side of things. So it was like with the grips and the gaffers and the non-union guys, and you know, they're getting drunk and they're hanging out and they're gossiping, and it's just the mundane sort of like Big Brother type vibe of making a film. None of the actors are sort of focused. It's not about them. It's about the actual crew. And yeah, that's a really good one.
I love famous people. I love them. I like to watch them eat anything like that. I love them.
Andy Watts, Starfucker.
Yeah, I'd be a stalker if I actually wasn't paid to watch them.
Why do you like working in the film industry?
Hey. Money. The only reason is money.
Big money. It's like kind of like that articulation of life. Studying life, and it's
by those last hands, that moment, that 1,000th of a second as the shutter clicks, as everything's immortalized, and I get a real rush out of that, knowing that I could do like that or that.
14 on my list.
Just documenting history, and a history that doesn't exist, and we're all making it up. And it's life, and I love it.
It's one of the conditions of my probation.
I don't know.
Why do I work in the film business? Hi, JT. How are you, sweetheart? That's why I work in the film business.
So I don't have to have a real job. So I can work with a lot of people who don't want to have real jobs.
You're doing what you want. Getting paid all that money, and you get free meals, and they pay for the hotel. You don't find that in any other business. Anyone that complains, I've never understood it. Oh, we're gonna have chicken again today? Really? Is it filet mignon and lobster you have every night, you know?
Because of the craziness, the zaniness. I don't wanna work 9 to 5. So I'd rather work from 4 to 1. 4 to 4.
When I was a kid, you know, I had a little black and white TV up in my room, and I would stay up really late watching movies. And for me, all my life, you know, it's been movies were, you know, my favorite, you know, art form. And so for me now to be able to have the chance to make those movies so that some other kid can be staying up all night in his room watching TV and watching old movies, you know, and the movies that I worked on, to try and keep that going. Movies are just such a part of American life right now. To have a say in that and to be able to work on those, I think, is, you know, a privilege.
It's a damn good time, man. Living, loving, working, sweating, grinding, hugging, kissing. It's all good. It's art. It's all come together.
I'm just trying to think, what was my first DVD that I ever bought? I presume it was The Matrix, I think.
Mine was The Mask of Zorro.
The Mask of Zorro.
I think it was just available. Yeah. The DVDs were sort of like rare. There might be 5 or 10 of them on a shelf. Yeah. And there might be one out next week. And then suddenly it started to become, there's 10 out this week and 20 out next week. And also, I want to mention one other thing, which is a really sort of oddity and curio. And it is the chronological cut of Memento.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Did any of you ever bother watching that?
Yeah. I never watched it. Yeah.
So you have all the black and white footage at the start, and then you have the color footage after, right?
Yeah. Yeah. How does it hold together?
It doesn't really hold together. Oh. It doesn't sort of work because it, what's this guy from Groundhog Day? Phil Kahn.
Oh, Stephen Tobolowsky.
The scene with him and that becoming the reveal of it actually being the backstory of Guy Pearce's character, they don't really work when you sort of put it in chronological order. Also, just want to mention, because, you know, you talked about Lord of the Rings, the Superman box set, the documentaries on those.
We were in a terrible, terrible bind in terms of having to get things done quickly because Brando and Hackman had been signed. And they were locked into start dates.
They really were unvarnished sort of look backs on what the set was like and the struggles for Donner with the Salkinds and making the first blockbuster in the comic book realm. Two films at once, a huge undertaking.
And I'm remembering something like we got on the picture like at Christmas and we were going to shoot in June. 6 months is no time to prepare a huge picture like this.
I cannot talk for Guy Hamilton. But whatever he did, he saw the picture different than I did. There was not one piece of preparation of that year that they had on the picture that I could use.
They had spent $6 million before Dick even got on. Nobody knew how to make Superman fly. Dick started from scratch.
And it's a great documentary. It's like the Alien quadrilogy in that respect, where the gloves are off, but no one's trying to strike blows. Mm-hmm. They're just sort of matter-of-factly telling you, oh, we didn't get on. This person had Parkinson's, you know, whatever.
There was also as well the Phantom Menace documentary. Do you remember that one?
Pierce, I was literally about to say it.
Which, again,
now,
it's sort of...
You can't get that now. You can't
You know,
get
I'm
it.
Sure at the time they didn't think they were releasing anything that was, like, you know, too revealing. But actually, it's only kind of in hindsight when you watch it. And you kind of go, oh, okay, that's an interesting
so
moment.
Awkward.
You know, when Lucas kind of says...
Jar Jar is a key to all this. If we get Jar Jar working, because he's a funnier character than we've ever had in any of the movies before.
Well,
yeah.
Oh. And you're like, oh, God. No, man. Oh. There's also this bit where they show the rough cut to the staff again, to the guy,
that's
you know, the inner circle
the
for the
I'm
first time.
Of, yeah.
And like literally, it's like, okay, let's do this. And it's like cut to 2 hours later. And just you can see the blood has kind of drawn from people's faces. Yeah. And they're kind of like wondering what the... And even Lucas is there going...
It's a little disjointed. It
seems like a lot of short scenes.
It's bold in terms of jerking people around, but... I may have gone too far in a few places.
Yes.
Isn't it?
And he goes, it goes from A to C... But it needs to really go from A to B to C. We're kind of missing B. Yeah. So we need to find a B somewhere. It's, you know, it's emergency stations of like, how are we going to fix this? How are we going to fix this?
And boy, did they.
But it's on, I'm sure it's one of those documentaries.
It's on YouTube.
You don't find it on the, it's on YouTube.
It is on YouTube. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's so well.
It's so good. And also as well, you get to see Spielberg and Lucas just hanging out like two movie nerds on the set. Yeah. And basically Lucas is kind of showing him around and he shows him one of those droid things and the arm falls off and they're trying to put it back on.
Spielberg's like he's enabler. This is going to be the best movie ever made, George. This is going to break all the records. It's going to be amazing. It's going to be amazing.
It's kind of sweet, their friendship in that respect.
It is. Yeah. It is. And actually, but, you know, when you mentioned earlier on about, you know, it's a shame that Spielberg hasn't done commentary tracks. I always remember was a Lawrence of Arabia documentary, the one that's on the DVD, with him talking about it. Because
He was waxing lyric about David
Lean. That he watched it with David Lean, and David Lean basically gave a commentary to him.
I was involved in the restoration of Lawrence, and I remember the honor of sitting next to David the first time we showed him his own film. And he watched it for the first time in a long time with us, all finished, brand new answer print on the available printing stock that was much better than the available printing stock he had in the 60s. But instead of being quiet and watching the picture for his own pleasure, he wanted to talk me through every single scene. So I got a kind of, what we have on our DVDs today, where you've got the director talking about his film while you watch the picture, you got the narration on one track. It was exactly the experience I had, except it was live. And David Lean is next to me, giving me all the details of how every single sequence was shot, where it was shot, what Peter O'Toole was like that morning. That was a good morning for Peter, a bad morning for Peter, what it was like working with Omar Sharif, what it was like working with Alec Guinness again. I mean, David was narrating the backstage How I Made Lawrence of Arabia while we were watching together Lawrence of Arabia Restored. It was an amazing couple of hours for me.
Could you imagine? Like, how, you know, it's such a pity nobody was able to record that.
Yeah, it is such a shame. My God, that would be amazing.
Imagine.
Nowadays, you've got to sign up to a podcast to hear an audio commentary. It's tragic.
Please consider becoming a Patreon member, where you will enjoy bonus commentaries.
But, you know, again, the great thing is that, like, so many of these commentaries are on YouTube, and you can, like, you know, it's quite easy to download them as MP3s, put them on your phone, and they're basically like a podcast. So if you've run out of episodes of Best Bits to listen to, you could actually then listen, because they are sort of like mini film schools, some of them.
Yeah, they are.
They're quite amazing.
Ours are especially.
Yeah, I'll give you just a couple of more examples of the Werner Herzog's commentary on Aguirre, Wrath of God, is flipping brilliant. First of all, it's Werner Herzog, right? So, you know, you would listen to him reading the screenplay to Tenet. And, you know, that would be the first time any of us will have heard the screenplay to Tenet.
They are going backwards.
There we go.
Now they are going forwards. And now everyone's going backwards.
And it turns out, if you make a film in the Peruvian rainforest with Klaus Kinski, you may come back with a few stories. So...
I got a Werner Herzog box set, which includes the documentary My Best Fiend, the documentary Herzog made about Klaus Kinski.
Yeah.
And that's great.
It's great.
That's,
I mean, listen, it's all it's behind worth scenes listening stuff to this commentary just to hear him describe Kinski as a pestilence on the set. it's so good. I didn't realize that they met, like, he knew Kinski since he was 13. They apparently were in, like, boarding houses or something, you know, for, like, rogue kids or whatever, and they were kind of put together. And he said even then, this Kinski was doing unbelievable scandals, which was just, like, fantastic.
Also, I just want to mention one which is an absolute classic, and this is also on YouTube, and it is the Danny Dyer and Nick Love commentary for Outlaw.
All right, so listen, the bottom line is this film got a fucking hostile reception when it came out. A lot of people, a lot of the press didn't like it, and they thought it was fucking too violent. They thought it was glorifying violence. They you know, the maddest thing is they thought it was about a fucking country that doesn't exist. They're saying that, you know, the press were saying, oh, how can you fucking say that about this film? You know, how can you say we live in a lawless country and there's nonsense running around, there's people running around stabbing each other? And say, what fucking papers are you reading, you dozy cunts?
No star. I've never seen No Stars before. You fucking slaves.
It takes you to film school, right? Yeah.
It's Danny Dyer film school, the best kind of film school.
I've never seen Outlaw.
I'll give you another commentary, so, which is on YouTube as well, Spinal Tap, because yes. The commentary that we got on the DVD over here is the cast as the characters. So they're in character, yes, doing the commentary, and they're very upset with Marty DeBurgi.
Hello.
Hello.
My name is Marty DeBurgi.
That's the guy. Filmmaker.
I make a lot of commercials.
Yeah, he takes a lot of shit, don't you?
Now, let him have his say. Relax. Let him have his say.
Doesn't look Italian, does he?
No. In 1966...
I don't think DeBurgi is his real
name.
I think
he changed his name, you know.
I think so.
Really? Yeah. His real name was De Bergamo.
No.
De Bergowitz.
No. De Bergowitz, yeah.
De Bergowitz.
Yeah, I think he's one of those... Redefine the word
rock and roll. Yeah, he is one of those. Check it out, De Bergowitz.
Their exuberance, yeah. Their raw power.
I don't know why we trusted him.
But there was also another commentary that was on the Criterion US DVD, and it's just them actually not in character, but as themselves, talking about the movie and how they got the movie made and where it all kind of the genesis of it and that kind of thing. And it's really, really great, man. It's very, very funny, but also full of kind of detail. It's worth it just to hear Christopher Guest talk about the origins of Nigel Tufnel.
I was living at the Chateau Marmont. This was in the 70s, in fact. And a band came into the hotel lobby. I happened to be sitting there. And Englishmen. And they came in with the manager. And they were checking in. And the manager said to one guy, do you have your bass? I said, what do you mean? He said, do you have your bass?
I left it at the airport.
He said, you left your bass at the airport?
He says, yeah, I left it there.
He said, well, go and get it.
What?
He says, your bass.
Where's my bass?
I don't have it. He says, you left it at the airport, you nit.
He said, I did what?
You said you left it. Left what? And I'm not exaggerating. This went on for 10 minutes, and I was just entranced with this. And finally he said, go and get it. And he said, go and get it. What? It's your bass, you nit. Go and get your bass. Where is it? At the airport. So finally, this went on for 10 minutes, and I thought, well, you know, this has to be, we need to do this here.
But it's just basically Nigel Tufnel, just not understanding anything really about the world and kind of just talking in that kind of English accent. It's fantastic. You also kind of hear as well that they were given 50,000 to write the script, a first draft, and after a couple of days they realized,
wow, that's a lot.
That was a lot back in the 80s, yeah, early 80s.
Sorry, I was
But they realized, like, you wouldn't really get across what the thing was going to be on the page. So instead they used the 50 grand to do like a 20-minute sizzle reel of stuff, some of which is actually in the movie. So if you remember the black and white footage of them, sort of early days of the band, you know, they're singing, you know what I want, do, do, do. You remember all that? That was part of that. Also the Bruno Kirby stuff in the limo.
Terrible movies. Are we still in Manhattan?
No. We've gone, that tunnel we went through goes under the Hudson River.
So
the
tunnel?
We're now in New York. Yes, it's a tunnel.
Somebody had smoked windows.
Excuse me. Are you reading Yes, I Can?
Yeah. Have you read it?
Yeah, by Sammy Davis Jr.?
Yeah.
You know what the title of that book should be? Yes, I Can, if Frank Sinatra says it's okay. Because Frank calls the shots for all those guys.
They also kind of said as well that, you know, a lot of the scenes, they were done like Curb Your Enthusiasm, which was, you know, there was a beginning and an end. And like, you know, the people, you know, the actors knew that. But how they got there was kind of up to them. So like when you watch, like, let's say Fran Drescher or someone like that in the movie, she's basically just coming up with that on the spot, basically. Wow. And most of the takes were the first take, because that's when people are listening the most and being surprised, and you're capturing that surprise, because it is literally the first time they're hearing any of it.
That's how they went on. Christopher Guest went on to make all of his films after that, where there was no rehearsal, but they shot a lot of footage. That's and cobbled it together at the end.
Well, again, yeah, there's another hour of extra scenes on the DVD of, you know, it's like an additional Tap movie.
Wow.
It's probably the best scene is Tap go to the zoo. Again, Paul might want to stick that in there.
Done.
I've heard that mainly
these large apes. They're bread eaters mainly. They go for, you know, any kind of bread is
and yet it's strange, and yet they've developed as a race, they've developed no baking skills.
None whatsoever, no.
And yet, but they still feed on bread primarily.
Not a race though, they're a genus.
Well, some of them are smarter than others. You can't really.
They're a culture rather than a genus.
They're a genus and a subculture.
Yeah.
The culture is ape.
They're not a counterculture. You think of the baboons as perhaps being a counterculture.
The smaller monkeys are mainly bread eaters as well. You know,
really?
In the wild, they mostly eat bread, different types of
bread.
Well,
I knew a monk. I knew a bloke had a monk ate onion soup.
My God.
I know.
Also, let's also give a quick shout out to the John Carpenter and Kurt Russell.
I was just going to say.
They are always a good
hand.
Any
John Carpenter commentary is fantastic. But the one with Kurt Russell, because they're just two mates hanging out.
Yeah.
They're in the middle of doing like a commentary on the thing and they're talking about, is your son still playing hockey? Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah. This is fun.
The big hat was something I really enjoyed. I don't know how you felt about it. But
I had to learn with it. I had to learn to love it.
Look at this.
Set the dummy on fire.
That couldn't be our problem.
We don't know why you find that flashlight there. He hides behind you.
He hit. Kill you.
There you go.
Whoa.
There.
Whoa.
I can do this all day.
Oh, man.
I love it. The irony commentary as well, where he's doing commentary for Total Recall, and it's just like, this is me acting here, and I'm looking really strong because the character is strong.
Or this is me, Arnold Schwarzenegger, and this is me on a screen here, riding towards the camera. Yeah, this is my job. I'm a construction worker. I continuously used him as a human shield. Now I threw him down the escalator. That's a funny scene. She's trying to steal the suitcase. This is a wonderful scene where I come up to Mars as an old lady. As a fat old lady. She has three breasts, huh? That's the one with the three breasts. Oh.
God love him.
That sounds like my Werner Herzog.
He had no
impression.
Idea. He went in and says, "You're doing audio commentary. What do you mean audio commentary?" It's just like, "Yeah, well, you just talk about the movie." Well, I will talk about the movie. You know. And he...
One more, because this is a screen.
One more.
This is a screenwritery one. Okay, Chinatown, David Fincher and Robert Town, and also on YouTube. So no excuse.
Is this an audio commentary or what is it?
Audio commentary. It is fascinating. And Fincher talks a lot in it. And you're kind of getting almost like two commentaries for the price of one. I mean, you're getting Robert Town telling you how he wrote Chinatown and why. But also you're getting a whole lot of Fincher and kind of understanding the kind of director that he is and what makes him tick and the things that he responds to. Stuff like the way that Polanski frames a scene, even down to really small details.
I've asked you this before, but I think it's good to finally put it to rest, which is somebody once pointed out to me something about this movie, the visual motif of this movie and how unbelievably relentless and perfectly formulated the visual motif, which is, and you've told me that you were unaware of it, but the notion that throughout the movie, there's a running gag of two objects that are similar and one of which is flawed. And it begins with the watches here, and the watches get wound and they get left under the tire and one of them gets crushed. And later on, the glasses that are going to be found in the saltwater tide pool, one of them is broken. And the sunglasses that Nicholson wears out in the orange groves when he gets hit, and one of them lenses breaks. When he follows Evelyn, he goes out and he breaks one of the taillights. It can even take it as far as the nostril that gets slit and the imperfection in Faye Dunaway's eye, even through to the sister-daughter that you have these two. And was that at all discussed ever?
No. It was never discussed. And I was as surprised, I guess, as anybody when it was pointed out to me. But it was operating. I was dimly aware when I used the flaw in the iris that there was some leitmotif going on, but I didn't really pay that much attention to it.
It's so funny because it is one of those things where, especially when a movie achieves the kind of status that this movie has in terms of, you know, its value to film students, you know, there are people heap meaning onto onto pictures, and so it becomes one of those things where when it was first told to me, I thought, that is the most brilliant thing I've ever heard. And the fact that the creators of this film could have kept that front and center, and that that was part of their the way they stitched the whole thing together. And I'm so glad that when I finally brought it up to you, you rolled your eyes and laughed.
It was operating at a level of which I was unaware. And I don't think Roman was either.
Imagine working with Fincher. He must be just every single detail, just like under a microscope. You know, the guy doesn't miss a thing. Great crack. Yeah.
So relaxed.
So relaxing. But
do you remember when he trolled Ben Affleck and he said that they had to shut down production on was a Gone Girl because the character wouldn't wear a Mets hat or something like that?
It was.
Or a Yankees hat or something like that.
Affleck.
Celtics or whatever. American sports. And it was all bullshit. He was just making it up. He was just making up to poke fun. And people took it seriously.
Talking about things that aren't true. He tells Town about this theory that somebody told him.
Oh, Robert Town.
No idea. That was there. No idea. So it does kind of show you how much we can read into things and that, you know, the people themselves weren't aware of, you know. He's also fascinating just about Nicholson's character as well. Just, again, as screenwriters.
Yeah.
Just talking about how it was like a reaction to the sort of classic Private Eye character that doesn't do divorce work. But like in his experience, the most successful Private Eyes all did divorce work. But he also made a point of, in a lot of scenes, you've got Nicholson, you've got Giddies basically telling the audience what his code is and making sure that they understand that he has lines that he won't cross. You know, so he does have some kind of morality. So then when you see like John Huston and when the whole thing kind of unravels at the end and the evil of John Huston's Noah Cross character, it really, you feel it hits home with Nicholson's character. It means something, you know? There's a heart there to be broken. But also said they had a great line. They had a great line about character. Character is layers of dysfunction.
I suppose that's true because people are just layers of dysfunction.
I was going to say, look at us, but no, don't.
Fantastic. And do you want to spin the wheel one more time?
I'll give it a go. It should be well oiled by this stage. Now, Mick said he was really going to do a job on it. There we go.
We did three the last time. Symmetry. Hopefully this is an easy topic.
Okay. Let's see here. We got best trailer.
Oh my God. Best trailer. Google best trailers.
There's one that immediately comes to mind for me.
Go on.
I tend to remember the trailers that let me down the most.
So great trailers, but the film then is terrible. Mm.
Yes.
Okay.
The US domestic trailer to Prometheus.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yes.
That trailer kicked ass.
A king has his reign. And then he dies. It's inevitable.
Obviously, it harkened back to the original Alien trailer, which again is also a masterpiece, you know, with the klaxon going off and this building tension and dread. But the film itself felt like all it was that trailer. So I'm almost glad the film existed because that trailer is so amazing.
They want us to come and find them.
We're all here because of a map you two kids found in a cave.
Not a map, an invitation.
From whom?
Please tell me you can read that.
Prometheus, are you seeing this?
Whatever that probe is picking up, it's reading life form.
What do you mean a life form?
Oh, the head. They're changing.
Changing into what?
Moving? These things moving?
What is that?
There's a ship.
They're leaving.
To go where?
Earth.
It was so wrong. Take us home! If you don't stop it, there won't be any home to go back to!
Why is that door open? Cut it out!
Thank you.
was amazing, Kevin. Yeah, I'm so glad you played it in full. That was incredible.
Since we were talking about like documentaries and stuff, isn't there a brilliant documentary about the making of Prometheus?
Oh, I haven't watched it.
As well, which is better than the movie.
It would have to be.
Because it also interviews the original writer.
Oh,
John Spates.
John Spates, yeah.
And he's quite kind of candid, basically, about, you know, his role and then what happened when, what's his name, took over?
Damon Lindelof.
Yes. Yeah.
And the changes that were made. You don't normally get to see the original writer talking on the documentary. For some reason, you know, production companies don't like that.
I wonder why. That's why we start podcasts. Do you know other trailers that I really like are the ones which are bespoke? Mm. They're not actually cobbled together from footage from the film. Actually, it's like a scene in itself. And one coming to mind is the Dirty Rotten Scoundrels trailer.
This Christmas, you'll want to see a movie that cherishes good human values.
It's more of a teaser trailer, but it's the one with Steve Martin and Michael Caine, and they are walking along a harbour, and they pass an elderly lady who is hobbling along. And as the trailer comes to an end, Steve Martin gently pushes the lady into the river. And it's very funny.
Be looking for this Christmas, then you won't want to see Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
Yeah.
Well, I think we might have mentioned this before, but the Godzilla ones, obviously, as well. The
Oh, yeah.
From 1998.
With the foot.
Godzilla. With the museum one and the fishing one. The museum one was, again, like you said, a bespoke, not in the movie, just shot for that teaser thing. And also, it was an in-joke, obviously, about Jurassic Park, because you got all these kids on a school trip looking at a Tyrannosaurus Rex.
Weighing more than 4 metric tons.
You know, I'm just saying this is the most fearsome predator ever to be on the planet Earth. And then this huge Godzilla paw comes down through the roof of the museum and crushes it, which is pretty cool.
This creature was believed to be one of the largest predators who ever lived on our planet.
Do you remember the trailer to Rogue One? That was cobbled together with footage that never ended up in the film. It was like alternate cuts, and they were adding in TIE fighters and stuff that weren't there. Mm. And that was a cracking trailer, but yeah, a lot of that stuff just was not part of the narrative of the film.
We have a mission for you. A major weapons test is imminent. We need to know what it is and how to destroy it.
Is that clear?
Yes, sir.
And that's happened more and more.
Also, this isn't a kind of a new phenomenon at all. You know, you can go back to Psycho. Psycho, the trailer for that is basically 6 minutes of Hitchcock walking around the set.
Oh, giving...
And kind of teasing you.
Yeah.
I tell you what it reminded me of. It reminded me of one of those reminded me of one of those Irish Times property videos. You know where the video goes in and shows you around the house.
Good afternoon.
It's Hitchcock showing you around, you know.
Here we have a quiet little motel.
Terrible things happened here last week. You know, I couldn't possibly begin to describe. And eventually he gets to like the bathroom, you know, and the shower. And he's kind of like, you know, oh, they've cleaned all of this up now. It's a big difference. You should have seen all the blood.
Bathroom. Cleaned all this up, you know. Big difference. You should have seen the blood. The whole place was, well, it's too horrible to describe. Dreadful. And I'll tell you, there's a very important clue was found here. Well, the murderer, you see, crept in here very slowly. Of course, the shower was on, there was no sound. And,
Uh,
You know, when he comes to the foot of the stairs, he says, "You should have seen the body. It broke his back on impact." And it was like, yeah, it's great. It's a great marketing, clever
it's
marketing.
It's awesome. Voice. I think like every director should be made make one of those kind of trailers, you know, just walking around the set explaining their movie, you know, but a wink and a nod.
I've mentioned this before on the podcast, but I worked for a producer who said to write the trailer first before you write the draft. And I'd never heard of that before.
That's too much work. You just write the poster. Write the poster.
just write the title. That's all you need.
Here, I'm going to be really lazy with my pick because, again, I've had so much time to research it.
Lord of the Rings.
Lord of the Rings. Return of the King.
Madness.
I'll actually go lazier, right?
Hobbit.
My favorite. Not my favorite, but one of the most impactful trailers that I've ever seen. Star Wars The Phantom Menace.
Oh,
the first teaser trailer for that, when it landed.
Incredible. You have
to put yourself in my shoes, someone who had been a Star Wars fan all his life, never seen a Star Wars film in the cinema, and all of a sudden this trailer lands and it conveys mystery, epic battles. It had everything. Like you were saying earlier on about Prometheus, it promised so much cool shit.
I will not condone a course of action that will lead us to war.
A communications disruption can mean only one thing: invasion.
At last we will reveal ourselves to the Jedi. At last we will have revenge.
Begin landing your troops.
We haven't much time.
The Federation has gone too far.
I remember them playing that on MTV.
Yes. Oh, God. And
I just remember it's been one of the first trailers you were able to try and like download. The internet was at a certain point
where you could,
but it did take like an hour or something like that, you know, to download
and
it.
You saw like a postage stamp size
video. A tiny QuickTime kind of little screen.
And it was also one of those phenomenons that whatever film it was playing in front of, and I can't remember which one it was right now, had a huge box office boost, became the number one film because people just went in to watch the trailer for episode one and they just walked out as soon as the film was over, and they would buy a ticket to the next screening of that film so they could see it again in the cinema. Yeah. But wow.
Get to your ships!
They will never get me onto one of those dreadful starships.
Always two there are, a master and an apprentice.
Wipe them out, all of them.
I always thought like the absolute madness of that trailer revealing Darth Maul's double lightsaber.
Oh, double-edged lightsaber.
Why the hell do you show that in a trailer? Surely you keep that for the movie. Imagine if you had no idea about it and then it happens. Like
they did it as well in The Force Awakens. But you're reminding me, Will, of the premiere of The Force Awakens trailer, and it was shown at the expo they do for Star Wars.
Right,
they played that trailer to an auditorium of about 10,000 people, and the shivers of anticipation where they're like, it's an actual destroyer in the desert. And of course it ends, we're home, and just the eruption.
That, I have to admit, that trailer gave me tingles. That trailer certainly gave me tingles as well. I had a fan boner watching it.
Oh, I'm going to mention as well, because one of my favorite films is Halloween. And when the requel came about, the Lego sequel, the Halloween 2018 one, you know, bringing back Laurie Strode.
I have prayed every night that he would escape.
Who the hell did you do that for?
So I can kill him.
and it's just like cutting to the shotgun going off. It's like, this is fucking, this is movies, this is cinema.
His home.
I need to protect my family.
You have no security system, Karen.
Mom, you need help.
Evil is real.
There's a reason we're supposed to be afraid of this night.
I've been preparing for this for a long time.
It is not safe to be on the street tonight.
Go home! Get out of here! Get inside! Michael!
I loved it. I loved it. I remember I was so excited. I was like watching all of the different YouTube reactions to the trailer itself, and it just really fucking worked.
I'll give you a couple of more obvious ones as well. Citizen Kane, that trailer is still amazing.
I suppose that's cinema as well.
Though. But it's like, it's just so weird. It's basically Orson Welles as a microphone talking to you, and he's so cocky, basically, and confident about kind of introducing the cast. He was like, you know, you don't know this person's name, but you will.
Wow.
Thank you. How do you do, ladies and gentlemen? This is Orson Welles. I'm speaking for the Mercury Theatre, and what follows is supposed to advertise our first motion picture. Citizen Kane is the title, and we hope it can correctly be called a coming attraction. It's certainly coming to this theatre, and I think our Mercury actors make it an attraction. I'd like you to meet them. Speaking of attractions, well, the chorus girls are certainly an attraction, but frankly, ladies and gentlemen, we're just showing you the chorus girls for purposes of ballyhoo. It's a pretty nice ballyhoo. But here's some of our real Mercury people. This is the first time you've seen most of them on the screen. Hey, give Joe a little light. Thanks. Now smile for the folks, Joe. Smile. Joseph Cotton, ladies and gentlemen. That's it. Joseph Cotton. I think you're going to see a lot of him. Here's Ruth Warwick, whom I know you love. Ruth. Look at the camera, Ruth. We caught Ruth with her hair up. And here's somebody you've all heard on the radio, so I don't have to tell you he's wonderful, Ray Collins.
It still feels kind of fresh and new and different.
You decide for yourself.
And one other one as well, and probably the funniest trailer.
Here we go. It's going to be Grabbers, isn't it?
It's going to be Grabbers. You know what?
Thanks, man.
The Jerry Seinfeld documentary, Comedian.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
Oh, it's interesting. It hasn't aged that well, unfortunately, basically Jerry is there. You know, the whole conceit of it is that he's done Seinfeld. The series is over. He's done his special, which is basically all his greatest hits. And now he's never going to do any of the old material again. It's just going to be all new material. So it's him starting from scratch. And you see what a painful journey it is to put together like an hour of stand up. You see him like in comedy clubs, just like literally just failing, you know, like flat on his ass. And in fact, even the audience kind of going, is this your first time? Doing a comedy gig, you know, Mr. Seinfeld. And there's also a young comedian as well who's kind of on the way up trying to kind of make his way. So there's kind of a dual narrative going on. But ultimately, Seinfeld's story ends with him going to see Bill Cosby. So I'm basically telling him,
advice.
It is one of the honors of my life to know you. And it's just like, oh, God, man. Okay, that hasn't aged well. But the trailer is fantastic. Okay. The trailer is, again, bespoke. It's Hal Douglas, the dean of East Coast Trailer Narrators. In a world, that guy.
Oh, bring him back.
Right? Yeah, that guy. And it's just a sketch, basically, of him.
Oh, that was great.
Trying to do, they want him to do the narration the trailer for this movie. And he just can't stop, you know, all of these cliches. Yeah. In a world, a renegade cop. a space station.
Whoa, feedback.
All right, let's try this.
This is the voiceover for a Comedian movie trailer. Take one.
In a world where laughter was king.
No, in a world, Jack.
What do you mean, no, in a world?
It's not that kind of movie.
Oh? Okay. In a land that...
No, in a land either.
In a time...
I don't think so.
In a land before time.
It's about a comedian, Jack.
One man.
No.
When your life is no longer your own.
What does that mean?
When everything you know is wrong.
That's wrong.
In an outpost.
No.
On the edge of space.
There's no space.
A girl.
No.
Two girls.
No.
Now.
No.
More than ever.
Stop it.
A renegade cop.
I hate you.
A robot renegade cop.
You're fired.
You're fired.
No, you're actually fired.
I'm fired.
Get out of the booth, Jack.
No. I like it in here.
It's fantastic.
The Mad Max trailer, Fury Road.
Oh, yeah.
That was a good one.
Yes, that was powerful. That was absolutely...
I just quickly Googled their...
best trailers.
I Googled Greg Mubi trailer, and they came up.
Do you know, I obviously, like, my blinkers are on tonight, but one just popped into my head, that another one that was very formative for me was the original teaser trailer for Aliens. The one that's just like
the bitch is back.
No, it wasn't that. There was no dialogue. It was a teaser. So it was all like hard cuts against harsh music. And it was really, really oppressive and scary and terrifying, just like that sharp music. And I was terrified of the film just from the trailer alone.
I guess this is probably the place to mention it. But Grabbers won an award for its trailer.
Really?
It did. There's an actual award show for trailers.
Next thing you'll be telling me, there's a podcast for best bits. Jesus Christ. Come on. Are you serious? Awards for trailers. Come on.
I'm deadly serious. Just like, you know, advertising companies give out awards, they have their own trailer houses, have their own award show.
Advertising companies don't like to slap each other on the back. Come on. They would be totally against that.
The Golden Trailer Awards, they're held at the Sabin Theatre, and Grabbers was nominated for the Golden Fleece Award. And it was up against Hit and Run, The Last Stand, and The Man with the Iron Fists, and Grabbers won. And basically, what the Golden Fleece means is that it's a great trailer for a terrible film that duped the audience.
What?
Yeah.
What?
It's on Deadline.
Oh, that's horrible.
Catharsis.
Well, it's good to vent it here.
It is.
It's good to vent it on. Yeah, I think it's important
just
to get off the
chest. A whole lot of them bastards.
You're throwing a party. It's a welcome party for me. But you're leaving in a fortnight. It's just a goodbye party, whatever. Tequila!
Have you got some tags on you?
Not on me, no.
Oh, I'm pissed.
It's okay. I'm all right.
You know what? We've talked about extra features and audio commentaries. We've talked about trailers. We've talked about YouTube a lot. And Joe Dante has a YouTube channel called Trailers from Hell, where they do audio commentaries to trailers. And it's a great site and worth checking out there.
Wow.
Well, there we go. Pierce, thanks for having us on your show.
Listen, thanks, lads. You know, it was great. It was such a so fortuitous that I had the wheel all repaired and everything ready to go. Thanks to Mick in Coolockland.
And, you know, can I put an order in for coffee for the morning, Pierce? Because I know your operator stall is doing great business, by the way. So could I get some coffee in my coffee in the morning rather than just hot water?
I like civet coffee. You know, it's the one where it has to be digested by a civet, one of those little ferret things. And that's all I drink. It's that or basically Nescafe. But I'll, you know, whatever.
That's. I will see you in the morning, as usual.
Excellent.
with a line of animals ready to eat your coffee. Yeah.
So we left the wheel behind because we knew you were coming on and we had to make space for yours. So we don't have the wheel to spin it, Will. One of the first times we've never done it.
Oh, yeah, okay, we'll sort it out. This is so exciting.
We'll sort it out.
So it's a blind episode for next week. Okay.
Pierce, where can people find you? On Twitter, at Pierce's Writings.
That is right, yeah, Pierce's Writing.
And how do you spell that? It's P-E-T-A.
No, it's not.
It's Pierce as in Pierce Brosnan. That's clearly who I was named after.
Maybe you shouldn't be living here.
What goes on in this town is none of your business.
As long as I'm living here, it is.
Then maybe you shouldn't be living here!
So yeah, that's where you'll find me. And also you'll find me outside of the office of Best Bits with my coffee and trained animals.
Love it. Pierce, thank you for coming on. It's great to have you.
Thanks, guys. All right.
And thank you for listening. And we'll be back next week for another episode of The Best Bits.
I was just going, what podcast is this? Adios.
See ya.
The Best Bits podcast is produced by Will and Kevin.
All audio clips and music heard in this episode is the intellectual property of the respective copyright holders, and no infringement is intended.
If you enjoyed this episode, please like, share, subscribe, rate, review, all that good stuff.
If you have any notes, comments, scene suggestions, or just want to get in touch with us, email us at bestbitspodcast@gmail.com.
I love you to death. And
love you to death, son.
And this jog on, eh?
Good night, cunt.
And here is a clip from the lad's latest Mini Bits bonus show. The full episode, plus 100 more, are available on their Patreon.
Play dumb and stupid.
Two fun guys. Two fun guys.
So what's the story, Kevin?
It's been a minute.
It's been a minute. You've got news. Tell us your news. Hello, everybody. This is Kevin, and I'm joined by Will, and this is Mini Bit 72, just in case we didn't say so. I wonder what theme tune I'll put at the beginning of this. I've recorded so many of them. I usually just take my pick when I go for the...
Right.
So I go for the egotistical one, or the epic one, or the 80s synth wave one, or the cowboy and western one. We'll see. Depends on the mood of this Mini Bits.
Okay. I'm looking forward to hearing which one it is. I'm curious because you said to me, you've got news.
Yeah.
And I'm like going, what fucking news do I have?
You nearly died during the week. That is pretty monumental.
There it is. There's me dying right there on mic. Yeah, I almost died. Yeah, I almost died.
Because of the Discord.
It was the Discord, yeah. It was the Discord's fault.
What happened? Tell me what happened.
Yeah.
Because we haven't actually spoken in about 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Since the Irish recording, the Irish episode recording, we haven't been on mic together. Do you want to talk about this? We can cut it out if you don't want to.
I do want it to be at the front of, you know, the way we have this, you know, the tag.
We'll save that.
So I'll talk about it later. I'll talk about it later in the episode. You know, we can talk about something else, but I'm quite happy to put it later for our special people.
Okay. Well, listen, I saw these questions on TikTok during the last few weeks, and I thought, those are good questions. I'm going to make a note of them. I'm going to ask Will some of them. So I've got about five of them here. They're quite philosophical.
Okay.
And maybe if I ask you one as the teaser of this episode, and then we can pepper out the other one. Right. See how you get on.
Okay.
So give me from one to five, a number from one to five.
Go. Let's go five. Let's go all five.
Question five. If you could, would you rather spend a day with your younger self or your older self? Take your time.
No.
It's live radio.
This is a Back to the Future question.
Right?
Am I talking to my older self and my older self going, hey kid, bet on the socks?
Would you sooner meet up with your older self and get the wisdom of your older self to say to you what you probably need to hear now, which is get a shift on, get a wiggle on? Or would you sooner go back to your younger self and say, listen, that thing that you're worried about, or that thing that you don't do and you should have done, you know, give him a pointer or some sort of a steer. So it's whether you want
to
steer
going to work
or do you
out?
Want to give your younger self a steer. Forgetting about the ramifications and the consequences. Forget all the sort of the grandfather paradox. For those that, what the grandfather paradox is, go back to our time travel episode.
Yeah. All right. I think I'll go back to my younger self, right? And I'll say, you know, I'll ask my younger self, come here, what's the big worry? What are you worried about? And
you should know that. Well, I'm going to ask, remember what you're worried about.
But the specific thing, because I worry about so many things. You know, we all worry about various different things, you know, from, you know.
Losing your Spider-Man shoes.
Yes. I'm going to go, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Because guess what?
Content.
Next week, you're going to have Batman. You're going to have Batman willies.
Also,
right?
In the future, there's a thing called a podcast. And you'll be able to tell people what happened to your Spider-Man shoes on the podcast.
Exactly. It's all the bad shit that's happening to you will be, it's filling you up and it will be good content. That's all it is. All that embarrassing stuff that you do is going to be all right as long as you don't be too much of a prick and just stay the course. That's kind of it.
I'd be the opposite.
No, I think I would have a nice little sit down.
You'd have what? A nice shit?
I'd have a nice sit down and a nice little chat with myself. That's what I would do. How would you do? You're saying you would do the opposite.
I'd do the opposite. I'd want to speak to my future self because I can enact whatever they tell me. So I can, you know, live in the moment. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to know. I'd like foresight. Tell me what is coming towards me or what I need to be aware of. And I will make the change now because I can. Going back to my younger self, I would just be unburdening my younger self. And then, I don't know, hoping that that would change the course of my life. But I'm very happy with my life. I think everything's turned out fantastic. So I wouldn't want to risk change anything. So, yeah.
Honestly, that was my first thought as well. I was like, going, yeah, I want all the information my older self can give me. And but I was like, I'll go back and I'll kind of help my younger self out a little bit.
When you hit 65, your prostate is going to blow up like a basketball.
Yeah. I didn't want to talk to my older self because what if my oldest self is 37? You know, I only live, you know, another 2 years. I'm obviously by saying that I'm implying I'm 35 right now.
I was going to say, I was like getting confused there.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why I said I needed to put some clarity on that one. I would be afraid for my older self to come back and my older self go come back and I see the state of him and I go, oh shit, just one look at my older self and go, oh fuck no.
Listen, I just had the camera angled wrong there when I turned on the webcam here and that's already rattled me. I'm like, oh God.
You should never have the camera pointed at your balls, Kevin. Never, ever, ever, ever. Point
that's how I make a living. $5.99 a month. Well, listen, that'll do as a teaser.
Yes, go on.
Thank you to everybody that's listened to the latest episode, which we haven't recorded yet, and I hope it was a good episode because I have no fucking clue what I'm going to talk about on that episode. But we've already done it now because you've heard us talking about it. But also, this might be one of the random episodes. So, this is the Patreon. We do the mini bits. Come along. They're great episodes. We're going to keep talking, though. See ya.
Fuck them.
Yeah, fuck that.
Fuck that.
Bye.